And away we go here on this Getaway Friday, Friday, July the 17th, 2020. 16 minutes past the hour, you're tuned in to the Now program here on WWGH Radio. Scott Spears along with you for the ride, and this is going to be a fun segment because we are going to celebrate a major accomplishment in the history of longevity in the news business, and it happened just up the road in Columbus, Ohio, with one of our favorite people. I say this time and time again. I've always said this for as long as I've been on the air. We here in Marion get Columbus News, and you have choices in Columbus News of which you watch. And my choice has always been WCMH Channel 4. I tell Colleen Marshall this when she calls in. When she called in about a month ago during our anniversary celebration, I told Colleen this. It has always been the case. All that being said, 10 years ago, I took a trip to WCMH and did an interview with Ohio's favorite meteorologist, Ben Gelber, to celebrate 30 years with WCMH. Now, little did I know that 10 years later, Ben would still be there, still knocking him dead, and celebrating 40 years this month at WCMH. How about that? 40 years! Think about that. Longevity in the news business just doesn't happen. You have to have something special, and Ben Gelber has always had that. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones once again, Ben Gelber. Ben, how are you?
Good, Scott. How are you?
Doing well. 40 years, did you ever think you'd be doing this for 40 years?
Probably not. I mean, maybe doing something in weather, because it's been a hobby since childhood. But, you know, especially, as you know well, the ups and downs of real world, whether it be television or just life in general. You just make no assumptions and take nothing for granted. And as I've joked many times, you know, it's 1 year at a time, and it's, you know, it's even harder than predicting the weather is predicting how things will go. But I've been very fortunate, blessed to have been able to stay at NBC for a great staff, great colleagues. You mentioned Colleen Marshall, came not too many years after I started, and a great news team and management, which makes it all that much more worthwhile experience.
Ben, how did you come to WCMH 40 years ago?
Well, it was like everything else. You're coming out of school, in my case, graduate school, and I made a tape in the local cable station, and back in the old days of 3/4-inch tapes, they were real boxy, almost like a book. This was before the digital age and everything that preceded that. And I remember sending out some letters and resumes and mailing tapes out. And actually, one of my colleagues, a fellow student at school, is from Marion, and of all places, and this, we were at that point. I went to Penn State, but I did my graduate work with a teaching assistantship at Northern Illinois University. So what are the odds that one of my closest friends at Northern Illinois University is from Marion, Ohio? Little did I know, but he had recommended the Columbus stations among others that I had already sent tapes, and I had some interest in a couple of options. And Jim Goodall called me after they had received my information and sold me on taking the Columbus position and going through the interview process and then the moving process. And it was a lot of fun. So that was now, you know, I officially started at NBC4 on July 7th of 1980. And my first on-air weather program, which was unexpected because I was supposed to be in training, was July 12th, which was the anniversary was this past weekend.
You know, Ben, so many people remember in the 1980s, early 1990s, Channel 4 Not that they don't have a great team now, but they had a very popular team. Doug Adair had came in from Cleveland, the late Doug Adair. Jimmy Crum was there, who had been there for so long. What was it like to work with some of these people? Do you have memories of them?
Yeah, I mean, all of them were terrific. I remember meeting Jimmy Crum my first day in the building. Doug Adair came before Mona joined us, and they teamed up, and that would have been around 1982, 1983. But it was just it was a unique newsroom in the 80s because you had a mix, of course, of young people, but some longtime news anchors. Obviously, Doug and Mona were in the Cleveland market and had married as news anchors. And Jimmy Crum was just a sports legend, having covered so much in his time, and with great stories. And it was also the end, I think, of the news era where things, now the 1970s were famous for the origination of happy talk news. In other words, where newscasters began to show more personality. This was not the way, you know, news was done in, say, the 1960s. In the 1970s, that evolved. And then the 1980s, it wound up being, I thought, a better blend. Also, the technology was coming of age also in terms of news production quality, moving from film to video. But working with Jimmy, Doug, and Mona, you just learned so much. They had great stories, great conversations between breaks or during commercial breaks. And you learn to appreciate, you know, just being around people with that level of experience. And then on top of that, there were, as always is, a crop of young people, younger reporters, and, in the mix as well. And of course, I was more in that category as a young meteorologist. And weather is a little bit of a set aside. In other words, we're not often directly in the newsroom. But we wander in and out, and because we have our own thing in the weather area, drawing maps and graphics and things like that. But it was a different era of television, as pretty much each decade has proved to be.
Ben, 40 years in weather, how has it changed?
Well, I mean, the data were primitive, the graphics were primitive in the sense that, I started with wall maps, physical maps, and magnetic letters and numbers, and used dry erase or markers and a porcelain weatherboard. You wipe it off and start over again. I used to call them color forms back in my childhood era, but essentially you would stick on suns and temperatures. We had just a handful of weather models, forecast models. The resolution was not good. Satellite and radar were, at the very beginning, weren't even animated. In fact, the first radar I used didn't even have color. It looked like an old World War II style submarine radar. And yet I was thrilled. I thought that to have access to all this, and you know, with a back then a facsimile link to the National Weather Service data products, but that's all we knew, what we had. And Jim Goodall and I would often joke later, how did we, knowing what we have now in terms of technology, how did we know anything back then? I mean, we couldn't see rotation and thunderstorms. The forecast models were not particularly... They were good, but compared to all the things that we can look at today in high resolution, it's just not even close. But we worked with what we had, and coming out of school, a lot of it was extrapolation. We couldn't see as much as we can see now in terms of data. And of course, television itself has evolved quite a bit, and even before we got to the most recent digital era.
When we look back on this, Ben, because a lot of people, they want to know the weather, even if they don't care anything else about the news that night. They want to know what the weather is going to be like in the morning for school, for work, for the commute. And sometimes the storms don't come. Sometimes the storms miss, even 12 hours before. Is weather just always going to be a variable?
Absolutely. First of all, even the best models and best meteorologists, it's not possible to see predict local developments. You know, I think of weather as probability forecasting, which, you know, although we've shied a little bit away from this, it's still, as you just mentioned, your forecast, say Saturday, a 40% chance of rain and thunderstorms after a certain time. But that doesn't tell you exactly where and when. Now, there's a big difference between winter and summer. In the wintertime, you have areas of rain and snow. There's big blobs on radar. And you can time those out with forecast models, even back in the day as well as today, reasonably accurately. Now, the trick is in the details, because sometimes the temperature profile of the atmosphere is variable, and you're riding a rain, snow, sleet line. And you can, you know, the difference between a half inch of rain, 0.50, and a half foot of snow can be literally miles and 1 degree in temperature. So winter has its issues. But the summer is a completely different circumstance. We have quite a bit of concerns with pop-up storms. And those pop-up storms present all kinds of challenges, because by nature, they're somewhat random. And so at best, you forecast a probability of where storms might develop. But you know, there are local elements, including wind convergence to just where the atmosphere, where the lid on the atmosphere pops and storms can bubble up. So on any given day, thunderstorm coverage might be 10 to 50% of your viewing or listening area. And so that means, you know, a whole lot of people aren't going to see rain, and some of the other places are going to get 1 to 2 inches of rain, frequent lightning, and maybe, some dangerous winds. Well, you know, you could be in one part of the county or almost one part of the city, and the forecast winds up exactly right if you're under that pop-up cell. And then to the north, maybe a few miles north or another direction, nothing happens. You think, gee, where were those storms? So that's the problem with summer forecasts. And I don't know if, I think when folks hear scattered showers and storms, we all think, oh, we're going to get it. Well, maybe, but, you know, the probability may define that half or a third or a tenth of the area will actually get rain. And the assumption might be, well, gee, where was all that rain? Well, it was never meant to be, you know, all that rain. The coverage is spotty by nature.
What has internet and social media done to what you do?
Quite a bit. I mean, it gives us additional platforms to get information out and faster. You know, the news might be at 4, 5, 6, 7, 11, and then 5, 6, 7, 8 in the morning. But there are times in between, and not everyone's around the television. So the internet, and of course, and especially with the smartphones and cell phones, but particularly the smartphones, you can find or get that forecast any time of the day or night, or you can roll over in bed and grab your phone and look at radar and look at the internet. That it creates a lot more work on our part. You know, it's not just TV. I file forecasts on the web. I do Facebook Live, as you know, and post forecasts on Facebook and in some cases Twitter, and some folks do it on Instagram. We try to reach the audience in as many ways as possible. But when weather gets active, you know, I have to focus mostly on television, especially if we're getting into a tornadic situation. And then the web team will help out and live stream what we're doing on television. But, you know, I feel like you're kind of like the Energizer Bunny until you run out of energy. But, you know, you're going moving from one platform to the next. So
I'm always multitasking. I'm building my weather shows at the same time that I'm posting graphics and forecasts on the web, and at the same time that maybe I'm kicking out a Facebook post, you know, and it just, it's endless. Obviously, quiet weather days are considerably easier. Active weather days, it's just unbelievable compared to the old days when you essentially focused on TV and maybe a radio feed, and of course we do those as well too.
Ben, in recent years, I mean, we have Ohio winters and we have storms in the summer. There seems to be a lot more focus on breaking in, weather breaking in, breaking news and that sort of thing. What have you seen in the evolution of that? Do you think, for lack of a better term, there's any overkill there, or should we be doing it that way?
No, we're doing everything, in my personal view, we're doing everything correctly. Now, as a rule, not all stations around the country follow the same rules, but in general, what we do is that we cut in for tornado warnings, period. If a storm is moving out of the viewing area, and the viewing area is wide, we can certainly step back. I know it's problematic when storms move or affect rural sections of central Ohio, and we have to cut in. There sometimes can be some pushback, but we try to modulate that. Now we have a better way recently of having radar on screen with a scroll, as well as information that's very specific to where a storm is. So we can step back a little bit more than maybe at another time, knowing that everything that you need is still on screen. And again, tornado warnings are the time that when we cut it, outside of a derecho, maybe we don't cut in for thunderstorm warnings, because literally they can be a dime a dozen. You can have, when I worked last Friday, you can have a dozen or several dozen thunderstorm warnings going, and that would be a little too disruptive. And in fact, there was, I want to say June the 10th, all or a portion of all 88 Ohio counties had thunderstorm warnings. There may have been a tornado warning in there as well or two, but had thunderstorm and or tornado warnings, all 88 counties. And remember, our viewing area extends through Marion to the north, now all the way to Cambridge in the east, down through Piketon and Waverly in the south, and almost to Springfield. And of course, some folks watch us even on the fringes of those areas, such as Vinton and Jackson counties. So it's so you have to find the right balance. But sometimes our cases where a tornado warning's issued, and we go through the warning, and it's brief Doppler indicated rotation. Maybe nothing, as we hope, nothing touches down, and there can be, again, an attitude of, okay, well, nothing really happened. Did we need to be on? Well, first of all, we never know if and when a storm will touch down. In other words, this is radar based. In the old days, we couldn't see that. We didn't cut in until the National Weather Service or the old U.S. Weather Bureau actually saw a funnel, but that can be too late because that can swoop down in a matter of a minute. Now the rotation can occur 10, 15, 20 minutes before a storm touches down, and obviously some storms rotate, which we're seeing on Doppler radar, and again, the National Weather Service are the ones who issue the warnings, and then we put those on the air. Those storms may never, don't reach the ground, but it is not predictable as to when a rotating storm will reach the ground once a warning is issued. Now, we can see the depth of the rotation. In other words, is it shallow? Is it deep? The deeper the rotation, of course, the higher the probability. But I've seen some pretty clear-cut rotation, what we call hook echoes. Looks like a number six or a fish hook. We've all seen those. And I've seen hook echoes go right across Franklin County, for example, and we don't even have a tree limb fall. But I've also seen storms spin up and on the ground in a matter of minutes when we begin to see a deeper rotation. But the National Weather Service will issue a countywide warning, and then they'll scale it back as needed. So there are going to be many times you're on the air, and nothing ultimately will touch down, but we don't know that. And when the warning first is issued, will the storm intensify? Will it weaken? It could be even just the convergence of local wind currents interacting with local terrain or topography, and even interface between urban and rural settings that could cause allow a storm or allow rotation to reach the ground. So, yeah, you have to err on the side of caution. But again, we only cut in specifically for a tornado warning, and that's always, in my view, the right thing to do.
Ben, when you've been around for 40 years, so many people take note of you. I would imagine there are very few people after 40 years who don't recognize you, who don't know who you are in the Columbus, Central Ohio area. And in the 90s, WNCI featured you in the mighty Ben Gelber song, and which turned into a video, which people at WCMH participated in. What did you make of that when you first heard it? And by the time the video came about, what did you think?
Well, I certainly loved that. In fact, that was played. It's been played on our air many times since. Most people are surprised to know that it debuted on television on Valentine's Day, 1995. So, Scott, that's 25 years ago. And so it's a whole new generation that probably saw the video. When it first came out, I obviously didn't know, but it's also notable to keep in mind that WNCI and the Morning Zoo did a series of songs about different news anchors. So I was one of a number of folks who had music video, that came out. And why mine stuck, I don't know. Everything else came and went. But it did, I think, because they chose a catchy song, and WNCI with Dave Kalin and Jimmy did a terrific job with the song. And, you know, first, you know, it's always, for anybody, it's always mortifying to hear a song about you. However, the station... The promotion department came to me literally within a day or two and said, let's make a music video and turn this into something bigger. Well, of course, I thought, it'll play out in a few days. And they twisted my arm vigorously and said, and what turned out, and it shows you never know where things are going to go. The music video event was so successful, it went to, of course, back then it would have been a VHS tape. But that was to raise money for Kids in Camp, I believe, for pediatric cancer research. So the proceeds, which I think was through the radio station, had a great cause, and of course it wasn't uploaded to YouTube until maybe more than a decade later, which gave it a little more play. But of course WNCI has played it over the years, as has NBC4. But the key for me was, as they requested, I said, well, if I'm going to parody myself, can I have some creative control? And they said, of course. So I choreographed all those scenes in the music video, which you can find, at any time on YouTube as well as our website. But within a day or two, we put that whole thing together. Back with the music backing, I created scenes that matched the lyrics. Then we went over to a studio, and I met with the Morning Zoo folks to do the final shots, and then it turned around and aired that on February 12, 1995. So the fact that it went for a good cause, the fact that it still lives today, a quarter century later, I get to see many of my former colleagues. Very few folks in the video are actually still working at NBC4, but of course Colleen Marshall being one of them. So it's nice, and a little, it's hard to see yourself, get 25 years older, in my case, looking at videos going back to the early 1980s, but life is what it is. So, but you also get to see faces from the past by looking at the music video, and it, most importantly, it reached out to young people, both in, especially back in the 1990s when music videos were you know, huge, and MTV, and you know, it was kind of a way to, for me anyway, I guess to go a little cross generation, and that worked out well too. And the fact that now, and if whenever I went to schools, teachers would call, would play the music video, and then as we enter the computer era, would call it up on their laptops and play it on the screen to this day. So I guess I'm stuck with it for the rest of my life. But it went for a great cause. It's a great thing to reminisce about. It turned out to be very, very, very positive. In fact, I started on doing the weather on WNCI after the music video aired. So because they based that on the reception that it received, and so all kinds of positives came out of that, and still do to this day.
Reflecting back on 40 years, what would you say has been your best day, and what has been your worst day?
Well, it depends how you define best and worst. I mean, some of the best days were surprises in a good way, whether it was seeing or hearing from someone who they from an earlier era. I mean, I guess the you know, if we try to focus on weather, you know, the best days in general are the ones where you handle a major weather situation, you know, where things work out in a timely fashion. There have been some exciting coverage days, such as the 1987 April blizzard, which was unique in of itself, and being able to stand outside in 1/8 of a mile visibility at the Ohio State University golf course is still one of my favorites. And there are many best days where you're out at, whether it's the Ohio State Fair or the county fairs or in schools, with or without cameras. You know, difficult days, you know, obviously it's always frustrating if the graphics fail, the computer locks up. Those are never good days, and they're going to happen, and that's technology. But that's something you just have to accept. You know, it's just like baseball. You may get a base hit in your first at bat, and then take a called strike in your next at bat. You know, and that's, you know, they're going to be ups and downs that are technology driven. There are going to be forecasts that work out better than others. I think, you know, difficult days are the severe weather days. You know, no matter how good the coverage is, you feel horrible because, you know, there can be injuries, there's property destruction. Last Memorial Day, on the air for 4.5 hours, Memorial Day night, dealing with what turned out to be 21 tornadoes, the terrible damage in the Dayton area, and some moderate damage south of Columbus. But you're on the air knowing, you're talking clinically about storms, knowing that homes are being destroyed, and you're trying to get people to their safe place, but you don't know how bad it is. You know it's going to be bad, certainly based on radar, but you won't know that fully, and at that point it's just a matter of trying to get life-saving information out. And again, you know it's a bad day for portions of central Ohio, and so I take that personally, in the sense that, you know, I mean, there's a great responsibility in terms of timeliness of the warnings, outlining, and now we can do that with Doppler radar. We can see not a thunderstorm like in the old days, but what part of the thunderstorm and which thunderstorms are rotating. And that's a very critical component of modern-day forecasting. So I haven't had any blooper TV days, if that's what you're asking, but there's always tomorrow. Yeah, but everybody worries about that. I'm just very conscious about, there's always a chance you're going to, you know, as I worry about slip and fall on camera, you know, something crazy is going to happen. But those are real concerns, because there's a lot of movement and a lot of obstacles to work around sometimes getting to a weather map or to our chroma key wall. So fortunately, I haven't had, knock on wood, anything like that yet. Even a sneeze on TV, I used to dread something like that, but I think, you know, most folks would understand that. So, yeah, it's kind of a mix, and it's hard to really define. I went home to Pennsylvania some years ago, and not too many years ago, and got caught, in much to my delight, in almost 2 feet of snow at my folks' place. And so I was able to get some video and send that back, jumping in and out of the snow, and they played that last week. Those are among the best days, certainly. And also just meeting folks. I do stories with the honored heroes of the Crohn's Colitis Foundation, young people who tell their stories, Holocaust survivors, community, folks who do work in the community. All of those are good days when I get to feature folks doing good things or telling stories or raising awareness for whether it's an illness or an important cause. So, you know, they tend to blend together. Each one of those is important in its own right.
You know, Ben, as we talked about earlier, 40 years, a long time to be with one station at one place doing something. It's hard to look within oneself in this particular situation, but why do you think you've lasted 40 years at one place and been able to do that, have that longevity?
Well, Scott, I'm not sure. I think just making sure you show up for work every day is important. And, I mean, you have to grow. You have to, I had to get into the modern era of social media. I couldn't, I'm old school, as folks would be of my age. But I realized I had to get on Instagram and Facebook and learn how to do Facebook Live and make my, you have to stay relevant. You also have to stay active in your community, and whether it's television or any other position, I think, but especially the nature of the work requires outreach, and I do that as well. I formed a music ensemble to make music portable, both for schools and for seniors, and I don't know if any one thing means so much as more of a collective that you have to. I mean, I love the community, Central Ohio community, and I've been to all corners of our viewing area, doing weather stories and meeting folks and doing school visits. But it's essential to get to these locations and to be a part of the community that you're as a broadcaster. So you're not, one-dimensional or even, that you have other things that folks recognize, that they know that you're approachable, but you care, we all do, but you have to, put in that extra time as we all do in whatever. We all have different things that interest us or through outreach or through a family member like Colleen's experience with Alzheimer's, and she does a journey through Alzheimer's, her Emmy-winning shows every year, including one that featured myself and my dad a few years ago, that story. You know, we find things that touch us maybe personally, but also then make that part of our community storytelling. And I think all of these things, and ultimately, we're judged by viewers in terms of accuracy as meteorologists, reliability, competence. So I try to do science stories to educate myself and viewers to make science and weather more interesting in short segments, informative. You know, I get so many questions about climate change. Is it real? How do we discern differences? So presenting all of that, I think is how it helps regarding longevity. And I teach as an adjunct at Columbus State, and I've taught at Ohio State, as well as the schools, and meeting students all the time. That gives me ideas for science stories and weather stories. So I think you put yourself out there, and obviously you must do a good job on the air, whether you're news, sports, weather, as a reporter, whatever your field is, but longevity these days in this world, I don't think I could start in this era and work 40 years at one location. But it has worked out and I owe so much to NBC4 and management, as well as my colleagues, for allowing me to continue for this length of time.
When you go out in the community at this point, what is people's reaction to you? What do people talk to you about when they see you and you're the guy from television?
They just love to talk, even through face masks now, with proper social distancing. But everyone, you know, hey, when is it going to cool down? Or, you know, what do you think? Is it going to rain this weekend? Or is climate change real? You name it. Wherever I go, you know, it weathers a natural conversation piece, and I, the vast majority of questions, and even some of the questions you've asked, I might get asked, or how accurate are forecasts now compared to today, or I thought it was going to rain today, and it didn't rain at my house, and I'll explain, well, maybe it rained in Dublin and didn't rain in Hillier, where I live, but, you know, and we get into just, or someone tells me, hey, I had, you know, 3/4 of an inch of rain in that storm last night, or what's my impression of a particular weather pattern, all of this, and that, it's almost always revolves around weather. Got a lot of wonderful comments on the 40 years and some of the video this past week. It can be about your family, you know, if it's your, you know, maybe your boys growing up or getting married, or a story about my parents back in the day. Yeah, all of these are topics of conversation. And it's great. Sometimes I have to get back to my shopping list, or but while we're, you know, but we, you know, the interaction is, you know, something that's unique, I guess, and it's all very positive.
You know, Ben, with about 5 minutes left here, and I appreciate the time today, I think it's very interesting. You've talked about climate change twice, and that has always been, since we learned about it, a big, big issue. So the question that people ask you will ask you here is, climate change real, and what do you make of it?
Well, we can make the simplest of statements. You know, climate has always been changing, which it has, so climate change automatically is real. The more challenging question is how much is climate and weather, or are climate and weather impacted by human activities? And of course, that's the rub. You know, I point out that it's impossible to separate completely natural variability. In other words, the climate has always been in flux, a function of whether it's volcanic activity to solar activity, which is what I did my master's thesis on, variations in sunspots and solar weather impacting weather here on Earth, and what we put into the air through human activities, whether it be emissions. We've talked about air quality, nitrogen oxides, and motor vehicle exhaust combining with sunlight in this hot weather to create concerns for ground-level ozone, and other what we call greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, methane, which is 86% more potent than carbon dioxide, doesn't get as much attention. Some of it is strictly natural, and some of it would have industrial components as well. But methane, in addition to carbon dioxide, has reached record levels in the atmosphere. We know physics tells us that these gases trap heat, and all of this can be quantified, you know, and of course, so at what point do human activities either potentially outweigh natural variability, amplify existing warming trends? All of this is extremely important and affects all of us in one way or another, and not just, certainly air pollution does, and asthma and respiratory illnesses and cardiovascular disease. Yeah, one component is, you know, cleaner air is to all of our advantages, to our advantage from a human health standpoint. And then I think to keep it simple, because you can talk for hours about climate change and how you determine significance and how you begin to filter out human activities versus, you know, naturally occurring cycles. But the bottom line is, you know, we are warmer. We've had the warmest and wettest decade in modern weather history, and by modern weather history, since the late 1800s in Ohio. You know, that's not in question. We're having, we doubled to quadruple the number of heavy rain events, the top 1% or the 2-, 3-, 4-inch downpours. These are things, I just looked at a stat for Columbus, for example. We used to average 8 or 9 mornings where the temperature failed to drop below 70 degrees in the summertime. Now we average over 20 mornings. So especially in urban areas, it's not so much hotter days, but warmer nights. And that produces stress on us and on the power grids, obviously cooling systems. I mean, there's so many ramifications. And I think sometimes it's not always productive to argue how much of this is naturally occurring versus human activity, when instead we should be focusing on, as emergency planners do, rising sea levels. What are we going to do about it? Because that's the bottom line. You know, I work with, by the way, I've even spoken to U.S. military folks. They take climate change very seriously because it impacts shipping and operations on so many levels. They don't, as the one fellow, they don't have time for debate. They just have to plan for, what do we see? What are the trends? Whether it's sea level temperatures rising, global sea level, more tidal flooding, to just temperatures. And most interestingly, this may be my story this weekend. For the first time ever, the temperature in the Arctic Circle rose above 100 degrees a few weeks ago in Siberia. And that's unprecedented. The odds of that happening by pure chance might be 1 in 80,000 years. So, there's some pretty compelling data. And I work closely with the scientists at Ohio State University who retrieve the ice cores that look at climate data over millennia. In fact, this, you can look at ice cores back to 800,000 years and compare that to the composition of the atmosphere, dust, greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide, and make comparisons relative to temperature and precipitation or rainfall and snowfall. And of course, you can, whether it's the past few centuries or over tens of thousands of years. And that's where the rubber meets the road. They drill the cores. They go to places 20,000 feet high in the worst of conditions to bring back these ice cores to analyze climate trends past, and then we can apply that to climate models, in other words, toward the future. And again, I don't believe in being alarmist in any way. I don't believe in overstating. I don't believe in throwing all your eggs in one basket. So, just for example, we know that we're not necessarily increasing the number of tornadoes. The number of tornadoes is increasing because we're counting more storms because of Doppler radar and storm surveys. So we have to be careful not try to apply, every extreme weather event or to climate change. Much of this may be natural. The question is, are we, and this cut the element of science that's most important, for whatever reason you wish to believe, we do know the temperatures are rising. That puts more water in the atmosphere, in other words, higher humidity or through evaporation, and that what goes up must come down, and that comes down in the form of heavier rain events, and that raises the risk of flash flooding. And also we're finding that in a warmer environment, the jet stream is a little loopier, a little slower, and so maybe a hurricane that might have moved through Texas in a day spends 2 or 3 days, like Harvey, and drops over 60 inches of rain. These are things based on Gulf and Atlantic temperatures that are as much as 2 degrees warmer than they used to be, or 5 to 10 degrees warmer than average this year. That's why we're already up to our sixth named Atlantic storm. That's a record pace. That doesn't mean more landfalling storms necessarily or more damage, but all of these things are easily quantified and very relevant to the climate discussion. It's complex, my goal is to make it not a political discussion, but a science discussion.
Ben, with a minute left, and I certainly appreciate the time, 40 years, and we can certainly still hear your enthusiasm for it, but how long do you want to keep on keeping on?
A really good question. I love what I do. I check the weather every day online. I love communicating forecasts. I love meeting people. I have to be realistic about my age. you know, at 63, you know, your energy isn't what it was at age 23, even if the enthusiasm is there. So I'll keep going as long as I can, as long as they'll have me. And everybody at work has been very positive. And that's the great thing about working at NBC4, and Colleen would tell you the same thing, because we're in the same era. But I think, you know, maybe it'll be a personal decision. We all worry about our health, and especially with what's going on today, and there are things that can intervene that maybe we don't have so much control over. But God willing, I'll go as far as I can. And it certainly, if I do step back, it would be mostly to maybe for travel in later years, but not out of a lack of enthusiasm for continuing to do exactly what I'm doing now and have done for the past 40 years at NBC4.
Ben Gilbert, NBC4 for 40 years, and guess what? You can catch him this weekend. Just turn on the television or any other device you might have nowadays. Ben, congratulations on 40 years. What a long run, and keep it going for as long as you can. And it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Come back anytime.
Thank you, Scott. You as well. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay cool. As Scott already told you, it's going to be in the low 90s, probably through Tuesday.
Thank you, Ben.
Take care.
Legendary Ben Gilbert. We're back in 10 minutes.
HBO boxing analyst, Larry Merchant. Larry, how are you?
I'm good.
You say you will be rooting for Pacquiao. Who's going to win? We're far out, but if it was happening, bro, and you know they're going to be in shape.
Call me on May 1st.